Welcome to the PS Younger Self podcast, where we talk to inspiring entrepreneurs, thought leaders, and creatives on how we can all crush our fears and optimize our lifestyle to live our most fulfilling lives, and always on our own terms. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of PS Younger Self. I hope you are all doing very well. Today's episode is all about mastering your emotions or honing your emotional regulation skills from a neuroscience perspective. And I want to start out with this bold statement, and bold because it may challenge your conventional thinking of how you understand emotions. Emotions are not the universal truths we've been led to believe. What do you think about this statement? I hope it's actually piqued a bit of curiosity. See, today's episode will challenge everything you know about emotions, which stems from the classical view of emotions we've all been taught and quite frankly still predominates psychology, sociology, and the related sciences, as it is based on the classical science of emotion we all learned and still operate from. So where am I coming from with this provocative statement? Well, I just finished an eye-opening, fascinating book that has completely changed my perspective on the science of emotions and everything I understood about it, including what most of the public understands it as. I am referring to the book called How Emotions Are Made, The Secret Life of the Brain, by one of the most venerated modern scientists who is among the top 0.1% most cited scientists in the world for her revolutionary research in psychology and neuroscience. She is a university distinguished professor of psychology at Northeastern University. She also holds appointments at the Harvard Medical School and Massachusetts General Hospital, where she is the chief science officer for the Center for Law, Brain, and Behavior. She is the renowned Lisa Feldman Barrett. See, in my own personal development journey, I am constantly in pursuit of evolution, not in a way of chasing something ephemeral like happiness, but by expanding my knowledge and perspective. And this means I am always a student in my life, trying to welcome new ideas that may be different from what I understand today and challenging perspectives that may be perhaps narrow or confined. Why? Because I believe as I widen my perspective on the world and my being in relation to the world, I empower myself to better understand and interpret my experiences. And the knowledge and insights I gained in Lisa Feldman's book did just that. And my hope with this episode is to invite you along this journey to also widen your perspective on the science of emotions that may empower you as well in understanding yourself better by understanding our brains better. So to properly set the stage for this episode, let's reflect on some of the prevailing understanding of emotions within our current society and culture. It's a narrative echoed frequently in psychology, self-development, and in everyday discourse. You may very well recognize a lot of what I'm about to say. And then I'm going to counter it with the findings and perspective of Lisa Feldman Barrett's work. One, emotions happen to you. No, emotions are actually made by us. We construct them. And I'll expand on this in a bit. Two, we get emotionally triggered or have an emotional reaction. I certainly have been using these words regularly, and they have become part of my regular vernacular whenever I speak about my own emotional experiences. But this statement that has also become common in our zeitgeist is the perception and understanding that emotions are passive reactions triggered by some external stimuli, be it an event, a situation, a partner, etc. As stated earlier, our brain constructs it from three main inputs: sensory input, past experiences, and the cultural influences we are experiencing. See, stating that you're emotionally triggered or you're having an emotional reaction are such parts of the modern day language we have accepted and use commonly to explain and understand emotions in our social reality. But when you start to understand how the brain works by understanding Lisa Feldman Barrett's work and research, we understand how the brain works in relation to emotions, you may even challenge such language to form better descriptions of what is actually happening and start to challenge such language as it infers passivity in our experience of emotions. See, our brain is just predicting, as it always does, to make sense of all these inputs to do its number one job, to keep us alive and well. So if, in a current situation, it seems similar to a past situation that you have interpreted to be, insert certain type of emotion, sad, happy, angry, etc., your brain will likely predict you to experience that said emotion. Do you understand then how we cannot be emotionally triggered? We have a more active role in actually interpreting our emotional experiences. See, I love how Lisa Feldman Barrett says, we are the architect of our own experiences. And another common prevailing understanding of emotions is that emotions are hardwired in us, and there are specific brain regions that light up and fire emotions. But this is not true. While many of us, including me, up until I read Lisa Feldman's book, believe the classical view of emotions that they are hardwired in our brain and we have certain emotional centers in our brain that are responsible for generating and processing certain emotions, i.e., we've commonly heard that the amygdala is responsible for processing fear. But what Lisa Feldman Barrett found in her research is that our brain actually constructs emotions, as I alluded to earlier. They do not fire or have imprinted emotions in certain areas. In her theory of constructed emotions, which in one simple sentence states that our brain constructs emotions based on how it interprets the combination of sensory input, past experiences, and the cultural influences, and then tries to predict how we might feel in that moment based on all these key elements. And this process where our brain is trying to interpret our sensory signals and our bodily sensations is actually called introspection. This is an internal monitoring kind of system that allows our brain to construct emotional experiences based on the interpretation of all these signals rather than simply reacting to some external stimuli. And let's just try to simplify it even further, because I know that this can be complex. It certainly was. I had to really try to reread and try to really grasp and understand, like, what does this all really mean? So to simply put, without using scientific words, it means that, you know, the emotions that we understand today, such as happiness, sadness, anger, etc., are just stories our brain makes up and constructs based on what's happening around us, what we have experienced in the past, and the bodily sensations we are experiencing. And they are not automatic reactions. They are interpretations our brains create and construct, kind of like making up a story to explain how we're feeling. So on that note, you might ask, well, do we have feelings? Yes, we do have feelings. And these feelings are not constructed. But actually, I learned that our feelings are really just simple from a scientific perspective. We either feel pleasant or unpleasant, which is called valence, or we feel activated or calm, which is just a state of arousal. And these bodily sensations we all feel are affect, not emotions. So emotions, as explained earlier, are more complex as it is, again, constructed by our brains. And lastly, another prevailing common thought around emotions is that we feel before we think. But this is not necessarily true because emotions, again, are not pre-existing states that automatically occur before we think. Our brain's number one job, as we learn, is to keep us alive. And it does so by balancing our body budget, which Lisa Feldman Barrett says includes such physiological mechanisms like metabolism, breathing, heart rate, blood flow, etc. And it does this by always operating as a prediction model based on, again, the sensory input it's gathering, our past experiences, combined with our cultural influences. So our perception of feeling really just involves our brain actively making sense of the world around us from these three main inputs. Here's a profound summary of what she means by all of this. Your brain does not react to the world. Your brain predicts and constructs your world. And so in a way, you are living in a hallucination that your brain has created for you. Okay, So now that we understand a bit about how Lisa Feldman Barrett explains how emotions are made by us and not happen to us, by understanding the neuroscience of our brain, I'd love to now dive into how we can practically use this transformative knowledge to empower ourselves. See, some people have affirmations. I have a question I like to ask myself every time I feel like I'm in a momentary paralysis of ruminating on what may feel like an unpleasant situation, or if I get stuck worrying about the uncertainty of something. And the question is, are these thoughts empowering me or disempowering me? So how can we empower ourselves with this newfound knowledge of the science of emotions to master your emotions or hone our emotional regulation skills from a neuroscience perspective? Here's what Lisa Feldman Barrett recommends, and I'll add my following thoughts on each. Number one, keep your body budget in shape. I first learned this term and concept from reading her book, as she links to it regularly when speaking about our brain, because as we learn, our brain's number one job is to simply just keep us alive and well. And it does so by managing and regulating our body's physiological systems like breath, blood flow, heartbeat, metabolism, immune system, etc. And because our brains are constantly monitoring our body's internal state through interoception, which again just involves sensing the different signals our body is experiencing from within the body, such as heartbeat, breath, hunger, etc., to predict how to interpret each experience to maintain our overall health and well-being. And this process is the origin of our affective feelings, which I tried to explain earlier. And this is the neuroscientific explanation. But it makes sense, right? If we are not physiologically well, are sleep deprived and not eating right and have a lot of external stresses, you cannot just think your way to feel better. It just simply won't work. You can say all the positive affirmations you want, it will simply not make you feel better from a physiological standpoint. Let me actually give you a recent personal example. So a few weeks ago, I recently returned from a six-day trip from Marrakesh, Morocco. The city is bursting with vibrant colors, exotic scents, and it's bustling with sounds, not to mention its extreme heat. Needless to say, my senses were heightened and overstimulated in this exciting city. But when I returned to Lisbon, where I reside, my body budget, to use Lisa's terminology, was severely taxed. Oh, and I felt it. Not only physically, but I found myself not only interpreting and reacting to a situation I was recently in an unfavorable way than if my body budget was not taxed, but the situation also affecting my mood, affect, and creating a certain emotional feeling that I was sad, upset, and worried, when first and foremost, my body budget was severely taxed, which fundamentally influenced my emotional state and how I was interpreting that situation, my affect in that situation. So two, she also recommends modifying our physical comfort, be it a massage, exercise, or even just a human or animal touch. Did you know that touch, be it from a human or animal, like your pet, enhances interoception? Okay, what does this mean? She states, touch provides sensory input. Okay, that makes sense. That helps to increase our awareness of our body's internal state, the process of interoception. So by promoting interoceptive awareness, touch can actually support our brain's ability to monitor and regulate physiological processes promoting overall health and well-being. Fascinating, right? This goes to explain how every time I am cuddling with my puppy, it certainly always kind of just positively affects my affect, my feeling. And third, she recommends adjust your physical surroundings. For example, being in a serene nature's environment is certainly more balancing to your body budget than, say, the environment I was recently in with lots of noise and crowd, extreme heat, etc. These three recommendations I just mentioned, recommended by Lisa Feldman Barrett, attend to our body budget, which again is just regulating and managing our body's physiological sensations to keep our body alive. But the last one that I want to share with you from Lisa Feldman Barrett's recommendation to master our emotion and hone our emotional regulation skill is actually one of the more interesting and fascinating recommendations. And I didn't expect this when I was reading this in the chapter. And she recommends learn new words to be more emotionally intelligent. See, what Lisa Feldman Barrett describes as being emotionally intelligent is not the classical view of how we understand it to mean. This means being able to detect emotions in others accurately or experience certain emotions at the right time. The real meaning of emotional intelligence, from her perspective, is about getting our brain to construct the most useful instance of the most useful emotion concept in any given situation. So, she says, if we learn new words to build a more expansive knowledge of our emotional concepts, she argues that if you can distinguish finer meaning within more general emotion concepts like awesome, you know, there's happy, content, thrilled, inspired, etc., your brain would have more options for predicting, categorizing, and perceiving emotion, providing us with the tools for a more flexible and functional response. So what she means by this is to suggest having emotional granularity. Now let's connect this back to what we just learned about how we construct emotions. She says people who make higher granular experiences have more emotional intelligence. Because they are able to issue predictions and construct instances of emotions that are more finely tailored to fit each situation. So the key to emotional intelligence is to gain new emotion concepts. And how do we do this? One, collect new experiences. Two, learn new words, even in other languages, because since emotions are not classically universal, as we learn, there are certain words in different cultures that may be more finely describe and experience the experience we are having. And words seed our concepts. And concepts drive our brain's ability to predict, and predictions regulate our body budget. And guess what? Our body budget determines how we feel. So the more we expand our vernacular, in this case related to emotions, we are constructing more concepts in our brain to simply predict more precisely of how we feel. This makes sense now, right? See, for example, Lisa even cites this in her book. There's a Korean word called jung, which describes a deep connectedness, an affinity, or an attachment to someone. And being Korean, I actually remember my mom speaking about this word, which I don't know if I really understood it when I was much younger, like what it really meant, because there was no English equivalent to it from what I understood. And what I knew in my context of emotional concepts. And I grew up very Americanized, even though I was born in Korea. So she said, so this is from her perspective, Korean people develop jung with someone, which makes it harder to walk away from a relationship. And she thought that it's hard to develop jung with non-Korean people. Now I get it, actually, because if we don't have a concept in our brain of what something means, how can they maybe have that experience? I'm just organically thinking this through. But I don't know how Koreans in today's society would agree with this sentiment, but that's besides the point. So Lisa Feldman Barrett even invites us to create our own emotion concepts and share and teach them to your circle of influence, because she says, once you teach them to your family and friends, they are just as real as any other emotion concepts and bring about the same benefit to your body budget. Again, this now explains why my mom thought that non-Koreans don't understand or experience jung, because they simply didn't have this emotion concept to really grasp what it means. See, Lisa Feldman Barrett cites studies and reports that people who can distinguish finely among their unpleasant feelings, i.e. 50 Shades of Crappy, she states, were 30% more flexible when regulating their emotions and less likely to excessively drink when stressed, less likely to retaliate aggressively against someone who hurt them, etc. So, see, I don't know about you, but this concept of learning new words to develop stronger emotional intelligence and to regulate my emotions is just simply fascinating. But one of the more illuminating, empowering ways to look at mastering and regulating our emotions. See, if I even rewind back to a couple of days ago when I was in a state of, rumination and agonizing over a state of uncertainty and just not feeling very pleasant. If I expanded my emotional vernacular, perhaps I would not have explained to my friends that I was sad, because I don't think I was really sad, certainly was not. And I wasn't angry, but actually looking back, I don't even think I was able to explain how I was feeling, but I certainly was able to articulate that my mood just was unpleasant and the state of uncertainty was certainly agonizing. But I'm keen to start this practice and see how I can get more emotionally granular the next time I'm having and describing an emotional experience, and to see how this rewires my brain's predicting model, especially as it relates to my emotions. So what did you think of what I shared today about this paradigm shift in understanding the science of emotion? If it even piqued your curiosity a tiny bit, that's a good sign that you are welcoming new ways to challenge conventional wisdom, which may not always be accurate, especially as we are constantly evolving as species in reconstructing our social reality. I'd love to end with a profound statement Lisa ends in her book. She says, like most important paradigm shifts in science, this one has the potential to transform your health, laws, and who we are. So P.S., younger self, emotions do not happen to you. You construct them based on sensory input, cultural influences, and your past experiences. So remember, you have the power to shape your own experiences that empower you. You are the architect of your emotional landscape. And thank you everyone for tuning in to another episode of PS Younger Self. It really means a lot to me that you're spending your time with me. So if you like this episode, please be sure to subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or just about anywhere you listen to your podcast, and leave me a review. Tell me what you think. It really helps me get more valuable content to you guys. So until next time, take care, and remember to always live your life on your own terms.